Hello, and welcome to Strategic Leadership with Paul Gilbert. I am really excited about this episode. I get to introduce you to a wonderful friend of mine who has had an amazing journey becoming a dynamic community leader. And we're going to be exploring some of those issues. But let's talk first a moment about why this channel exists and what it's about. So we are talking about leadership and strategy. And the reason those subjects are important is if you are with an organization that has an important mission in your community, it's really important to get both leadership and strategy correct so that you can be most effective in achieving your mission. So that's why we're talking about leadership and strategy. So without further ado, let me introduce our amazing guest for today. Martisha Brown is just an amazing person. If you don't know her already, you're going to love her by the end of this show. I've known her for over a decade, and we used to teach together at the National Recreation and Park Association Revenue Development and Management School in Ogilvie, West Virginia. And so we helped professionals figure out how to be more entrepreneurial in achieving their mission. And Martisha's just done amazing things. So Martisha, welcome. I'll do a little more introduction, but let me say hello first.
Hello, thank you. So happy to be with you.
So one of the reasons that I reached out and said, hey, can we do an interview, was I saw your post that you had just been elected to the Rockford County or
Rockford Park District Board of Commissioners.
Rockford Park District Board of Commissioners. So the Rockford Park District Board of Commissioners is similar to the Northern Virginia Regional Park Authority, NOVA Parks, in that they are park districts. They are independent government agencies that just focus on delivering park and recreation services in their area. And so Martisha has just been elected to be a commissioner. Maybe I should just call you commissioner from now on. I don't know. But that's remarkable. So when I first was introduced to Martisha, when we first became friends, she worked for the Rockford Park District. And she was an operations manager there. And she has since worked for a regional bank in the area and currently is the director of advancement for Rockford's Convention and Visitors Bureau. And we'll talk a little bit about what CVBs or Convention and Visitors Bureaus are, because they are a key part of a community that most people are unaware of. People know about parks. They don't always know about CVBs, although they play a really interesting role.
Absolutely.
And I think what we are going to be trying to focus on in the broadest way is community leadership and how to become a community leader and why that's even important. So, Martisha, why don't we start? Because Rockford is as much of a star of this interview as you are, because you are Rockford and Rockford is you. Tell us about Rockford, Illinois, and what makes it special. This is your CVB moment.
Oh, yeah. Well, I will say I am a hometown girl and also a boomeranger. So I went away for a little while and came back to Rockford because Rockford is absolutely my heart. Rockford is a place right now that is on the cusp of transformation. There's a lot of collaboration happening between multiple organizations, really looking to see what we can do to move our community forward, not only in terms of economic development and housing, but also in terms of just the overall experience. When you come to the region, do you feel welcome? Are there things to do? Are you able to enjoy yourself? We, of course, have a beautiful, beautiful park system, but I would say the heart of Rockford really lies in the people that are here. There are so many people that are committed to this community and really committed to its transformation.
So, Martisha, give us a little of the broad view. where is Rockford? What is its size? You know, how does it relate geographically? Those sorts of things.
Yes. So Rockford is, I usually explain it when I say Rockford, they're like, where is that? And I say about maybe an hour and a half west of Chicago. And then that paints the picture. So about an hour and a half west of Chicago, not a suburb of Chicago, but again, an hour and a half west of Chicago, I would say we're around 150 to 175,000 people. So we are kind of the little big city. Everyone knows everyone. It's probably 2 degrees of separation instead of 3 degrees of separation, but it definitely gives you that big city with a mixture of a small town feel.
Awesome. So you're earlier in your career, you work for the Rockford Park District. Now you are a commissioner for the Rockford Park District, in a governance role.
Yes.
And then you've done a number of things in between. Tell us about basically why initially you were attracted to the Park District, to what they do, and what role they serve in the community. Because I think that's an important part of the story.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if you've heard this story or not yet, Paul, but I started with the Rockford Park District, I would say, when I was 6 years old. There was a program at Andrews Park that wasn't too far away from my home. And so I would hang out at Andrews Park and go to Lewis Lemon Community Center. And that's where I first started to notice that these camp counselors are like getting paid to have fun. And so from being a participant, I became a junior leader, my very first experience in leadership, where I had the opportunity as a recreation staff member to teach the kids that were a little younger than I was. So it stemmed and really started from there. Went into a seasonal position, returned and worked for the Park District after, you know, during the summers of college, and had the opportunity to do my first full-time position with the Rockford Park District working in aquatics. And so when you talk about just kind of where it stems from and where the heart comes from, it literally comes from the very first time I kicked that, I played kickball, the very first time that I, you know, hula hooped at the park or played hopscotch. It really stems from that. I'm just so passionate, and I understand the amount of influence it has on youth and kids and those in our community.
That's about as early as you can find your mission in life, isn't it?
Yeah, it was so funny, Paul. Actually, the last Tuesday, I was sworn into the position, and they showed a picture of me when I was like 6 years old. And I'm like, oh my gosh, where'd you guys get that from? So they're kind of stuck with me for a little bit.
And isn't that like a cool coming full circle that you are now on the commissioners, so you are on the board of directors of this organization. And so you have been in both a management role, and now you're in a governance role of the same organization. And when I teach my classes, I often have a section on management versus governance. And it's a very hard concept for most people, because everyone understands management. But not many people have experience or even know that there are these governance boards in every organization. And you've been doing all kinds of nonprofit leadership stuff. So you are very engaged in what is governance, and just kind of kick us off. What are you seeing as the biggest surprise moments from moving from a management role to a governance one?
Oh my gosh. You know, I would definitely say there's much more interaction with the community being in this role, or rather maybe I would say a shift in community interaction being within this role. Another very eye-opening thing is that what's most important, regardless of if you're working in management or you're in a governance position, is that you embody the culture. And so it was very surprising to me that shifting in those roles, I'm still embodying the culture. I'm still wanting to help people enjoy life, which is the mission of the Rockford Park District. And so it made for an easier transition because my heart was still in the right place of what we're looking to accomplish for the community. So that was surprising. It was a change, but not too much of a change if the culture in your heart remains.
That's fantastic. So Martisha, you've had this amazing professional journey. As I was looking at your resume, there are too many things to even mention, but just a few of them. You are a certified nonprofit leader. You have been selected by the YMCA for an achievement award. You have been selected by the 40 under 40 in your community. 25 Black leaders to watch. You have been appointed to positions by your mayor and your governor, and then you've been elected. And we were mentioning before we started this, those are, in a sense, not really the achievements, but the indication, the evidence of the achievement, because none of those things would have happened. Your mayor wouldn't have known you, your governor wouldn't have known you, the Chamber of Commerce wouldn't have selected you for something, the NAACP wouldn't have, you know, identified you as a leader. All these things wouldn't have happened if you weren't demonstrating your leadership in a million different ways. And I'd love to talk a little bit about how you have become the community leader. So, you know, you were a 6-year-old and, with a hula hoop, thinking that Park and Rec was kind of cool. But when along your journey did the light bulb go off? Did it go off all at once? Did it go off sort of over a period of time about, this is about community and these are how you go about becoming a leader? Because you've done it not in one field, but in this wide array of areas.
Yeah, I would say it was definitely a progression for me. It was definitely a progression. I didn't even realize in my younger years that I was becoming a leader. I just knew that I wanted to give back. I knew I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. And I started to notice over the years that people were kind of calling on me to assist in different projects or to maybe join this board to be able to give my perspective or be a representative for the community. So I don't even know that in my younger years, there was intentionality behind it. It was just, what can I do to get involved in the community? And I think it was once I went and got my, I received my MBA from Rockford University, and I took a leadership class by one of my favorite professors. His name is Jeff Fernwald. And he just got us really talking and thinking about what leadership means. What is the difference between a leader and a manager? And I was like, whoa, this is real. It's, you know, it can happen organically, but I was able to then put some intentionality behind it.
Awesome. So it was that MBA program and your favorite professor that kind of turned the light bulb that you can be proactive in doing that. So for those out there that are maybe, you know, not as advanced in the community leadership path yet, but would like to be, what's your advice? What are some things that you should do when that light bulb goes off? How do you start moving in that direction?
Absolutely. I would say first and foremost, it's very important that you're not looking for a title. And so, you know, not to be overly religious, but I always feel when I get up to the gates and God is not going to look at my resume, he's not going to care about any of my titles. He's going to say, what have you done for others? What was your purpose when you were on earth? And so I feel greatly that if you want to get involved, if you want to get into leadership, you need to first figure out what is your purpose, what is your skill set, and how can you align those things? How can you align that purpose, the passion, and your skill set? How can you align all of those things? And once you identify that, I think it will be very easy for you to select what type of organization you want to get involved with and how you can apply your skill set to help them to move forward.
So you are engaged in so many different organizations. And it's one of the things I really noticed in looking at your resume. Because many people have, you know, one organization that they are connected with. But you, you know, in addition to the Park District and the Convention and Visitors Bureau, a lot of volunteerism and nonprofit work with the YMCA, with Habitat for Humanity, with NAACP, with RAV, and you can describe it there. There you're on the board of that group. You are doing training and teaching. So, tell us a little bit about the role of volunteerism and how you pick what organizations, because it looks to me like you have more than 24 hours in your days. I don't understand this.
No, yeah, I would say, again, I think it stems from knowing your purpose and your passion and your skill set. And so for me, something that I'm very, very passionate about is economic development. And so with each of those organizations, that is, and even my career changes, that is the continuing theme, is economic development. And it may shift between workforce development, it may shift between housing, it may shift between, visitors and that role, but it's always stemming into economic development. And so because I know that that's my passion, it makes it easy for me to align with organizations where I feel like I can be of assistance and serve. Does that answer the question there?
Let me ask a follow-up, because I love your, yeah. I love your answer. And many people who to gravitate to the nonprofit sometimes kind of poo-poo making money, like that somehow the economic stuff is of a lower purpose, yeah, than the community stuff. And I've always believed the two have to go together. Like, you cannot have a dynamic community that is not economically robust. And so talk a little bit about why someone who is so community focused and helping people is interested in this, dirty business of economic development. You know, tell us about that, because I'm with you.
I think we share that same passion. I mean, just honestly, if we don't have the funding, if we don't have the personnel or the talent here, how are we going to be able to serve our community? And so that's what really stems for me. That's what really causes me to be very excited about economic development. I want to be able to serve. And so we have to have the funding and we have to have the great people to be able to do that. So how do we work together to ensure that that happens?
In the nonprofit world, and you teach in this area, the terminology is often capacity building. So, you know, a nonprofit will seek a capacity building grant. And that is sort of code for, we want to get stronger and better. And and I am all about that, because you can't get there with just the community mission if you don't have the resources. If you don't have,
absolutely.
If you're worried about making payroll, you are not, yeah, focused on the mission. You have to have that taken care of. You have to have your electric bill is going to be, it's a non-issue, for you to be focused on where you need to go.
Absolutely. And I will tell you, some of the best non-for-profit organizations are those organizations that are able to shift that mindset and that thinking. It's okay to make a little bit of money to make sure that you can reach your mission. And so I can't say enough, especially about NCNE with being a key organization in our region and teaching those types of concepts and the importance of making sure that you have a balance. You want to reach your mission, but you have to be creative on how you bring that revenue in to be able to accomplish that.
So tell us a little bit more about NCNE and your teaching, because I think that is super community leadership, where you are helping other community leaders develop their skills.
Absolutely. So NCNE formally stands for the Northern Illinois Center for Non-for-Profit Excellence, and they have a mixture of providing courses, programming, services, resources, employment opportunities for those that are in the non-for-profit field. And so I've had the opportunity to go through their certification program and now teach. And some of the courses that I teach and work on is surrounding marketing, public relations, engagement, and also some of their diversity, equity, and inclusion courses that they're teaching, facilitating some of the Q&A and conversations surrounding that. I think that that organization is so very important. And part of the reason that I am a part of it is because they are teaching us how to be non-for-profit leaders. We have to have sustainability in the non-for-profit sector, and they are a leader in ensuring that we accomplish that.
You know, one of the reasons this is near and dear to my heart is Nova Parks, the organization I'm the executive director of. We generate 87% of our operating revenues through enterprise. And it's easy for folks to be a little critical of why are we focused on making money? But the truth is, if we weren't making money, we wouldn't be here. Or if we were here, we would be a fraction of our size and impact on the community. So every dollar we earn is money that we roll into the park system to grow it, to have programs, to do things that don't make money. We have to make money somewhere else to offset that.
Absolutely.
And the benefit to the community is enormous. But if you just look at it through a certain lens, you're like, well, why is this not-for-profit organization focused on making a profit? And the reason is that that makes the whole thing work and improves our community and, you know, makes the world a better place. That is the end result. But to get to that end result, you have to think about all the pieces that need to be there.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And also realizing how important we are as parks and rec organizations in stimulating visitors and the economic impact of that. And so I think about, for instance, with the Rockford Park District, the UW Health Sports Factory, which is a premier sports facility that in moments can switch from a basketball court to a pickleball court to hosting a volleyball tournament to a car show. I mean, just the beauty in that and understanding how important we are in the economic makeup of our communities. And so I think sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit on being a part of that. So I agree with you, Paul.
You know, on that point, so people think parks are just sort of fun places, and they absolutely are. But if a park is near your home is of more value. And when your home is of more value, then the tax base of the community goes up and you can afford better schools and, you know, all kinds of community services because the value has gone up. And like you were saying with events, if your park system is bringing visitors to your community who then, you know, might stay in a hotel and might buy a meal and might fill up their gas tank before they go somewhere else, that is adding, you know, sales tax and other and occupancy tax and other things to your community so that the people that live there aren't having to pay for all the services that they enjoy. You're bringing money in from other places. So parks are huge local economic engines, and that connects to CVBs. So tell us a little bit about convention and visitors bureaus and what they do, because most people aren't very familiar with that piece that is embedded in almost every successful community out there.
So I would definitely say, I'll speak a little bit about the Rockford Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, of course, acknowledging that each CVB is a little bit different. But what is really important is that for most CVBs, they want to make an economic impact for the region through visitors. And so for us at the RACVB, that ranges from creating destination defining events. An example would be Fred Van Fleet. He's from Rockford, Illinois. Of course, the Toronto Raptors won the championship a couple of years ago. And so we had a homecoming party for him where he came back to Rockford. We gave him the key to the city. We had a watch party for the tournament and brought the city together outside. I mean, these are the types of things that create destination defining events that becomes noticeable across across the entire United States to attract visitors. We also focus in on supporting the hospitality industry, which also includes our small and locally owned businesses. In addition to that, we market, we promote, we go out and recruit events to come to our city. So there's so much that goes into this role of a convention and visitors bureau, but most importantly, it's to make sure that we're stimulating our economic rebounding and return for our region.
Excellent. And I'm assuming that your convention and visitors bureau is funded by a hotel tax?
Yes. It's funded by a hotel tax as well as some state funding. That's shifting and changing a little bit with the pandemic, but mostly funded by the taxes.
Outstanding. So I used to serve on the Visit Fairfax board of directors and was chairman for a couple of years. And Inova Parks, which is regional, we work with all of our various convention visitors bureaus for every one of our jurisdictions. And they are amazing marketers. They, you know, a convention visitor bureau its core is marketing. And that's wonderful because as a park district, we have amenities, we have programs, we have things to do, and they mm-hmm. have marketing expertise that can, you know, connect the people to the places and programs. So it's a very symbiotic relationship. So I know many of our colleagues, and I'm thinking about Tom O'Rourke, our mutual friend of many years, served on the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And as you talk with leaders in the park and recreation field, many get that connection, that there can be a wonderful symbiotic relationship between the park district that is having facilities and programs and things to do, and the CVB that can market that and bring people in. And if you do that right, the benefit is the community. The benefit is you get better programs, better facilities, you get more people from outside your area spending money in your area, which then raises the tax revenues to run the whole community. So
I agree, Paul, we are absolutely in this together. We actually just hosted a state conference this past week that were all of the CVBs within the state of Illinois. And one of the important sessions that we had was a panel discussion with the Rockford Park District and the RACVB to talk about how this partnership, this collaboration, and this relationship is so very important to, you know, our economic impact for the region. I mean, just to not to toss too many numbers out, but for instance, in 2019, there was $409 million in tourism economic impact in Winnebago County. And one of our top markets is sports tourism. And who owns many of our sports venues? The Rockford Park District. And so there has to be collaboration. There has to be that mutual respect and appreciation for the work that's being done on both ends.
So we've talked about bringing people from outside the community in to spend their money and then leave and not have their kids educated in your community. their kids are educated in another community as a big expense. Let's talk a little bit about within your community. And I know that you've been doing some work. I've been doing some work. Everyone's been doing some work on diversity, equity, inclusion. And what role does that play in community building? And just tell us a little bit about what some of your efforts in that area have been, because it's a hot topic. It's something everyone needs to work on. What are you doing as a big community leader in your area?
So definitely the work of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging is something that is very, very near and dear to my heart. There's a couple of things that are going on in the community that I'll share with you. For instance, the Rockford Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, the RACVB, we've recently launched a welcoming diversity initiative that takes a holistic approach to welcoming diversity, not only from our staff and our board being a representation, but also ensuring that we're utilizing minority women and veteran-owned businesses and really digging into what can we do as a CVB to ensure that there's a sense of belonging. In fact, we actually have 9 commitment statements that we've made that we've communicated out to the public, and we will be reporting back on that. Another piece and project that I've been involved with is through the RAVE board. The RAVE board oversees multiple venues within our area, surrounding concerts, music, our Rockford Ice Hogs, woohoo, which I love so much. And we've also come up with a pledge to our diverse community. What are we going to do to ensure that there's equity even in the performances and the experience that we have in our region? Those are just a highlight of some of the projects and things that are going on surrounding that.
That's fantastic. Diversity, equity, inclusion encompasses so many things. I mean, it really is a very broad initiative that has all kinds of elements. But one of the ones that I think is particularly important and maybe not the first that people think about is to make sure that programs and facilities serve all the members of your community, so that ideally you want everyone to view your agency, your facilities, your community, your park system as welcoming, as having things that are relevant and interesting to them. And that takes some intentionality. It doesn't just necessarily happen organically. It might in some cases, but it also needs some work. I'm just thinking about a few things within our park system. We're very pleased. We just cut the ribbon on a national memorial for the suffragist movement, because the history of that movement took place actually in one of our parks. And so a community group raised the money, built a memorial. It's fantastic. And talks about how the 19th Amendment brought voting rights to women across the country. We just did two significant Black history events in our parks in the last few months. And we're going to be doing more, where we are really looking at telling a broader base of stories of the history of our community and the important things that happened. And so we are developing interpretive programs, interpretive signs. We have a Black and Latinx birding program. Awesome. We have, you know, we have birding programs, but here's one that if you might not feel comfortable in going to other ones, here's one where you might feel very comfortable in showing up. Yes. And you'll have other birders that are of multiple ethnicities that feel more comfortable birding together. So thinking about all those kinds of programs can help make a park system welcoming to others. One of the other things we have is at another one of our parks, several years ago, we created a Korean focused garden in our botanical garden that has been hugely popular with a large Korean population in our area, that maybe many of those people weren't coming to our park before or weren't as focused on that. Now there's a place where they feel extremely at home and honored. And so our goal is to try to figure out who are all the people in our community, various groups, and how do we serve those groups and their unique needs and desires. And we have big community festivals for Pakistanis and Indians and Bolivians, and we have Nova Pride. So we're bringing in groups that identify in different ways, and having programs and events that serve that segment of the community. So
that sounds phenomenal, Paul. And I couldn't agree more. I think that as we look at diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, this has to be a long game decision. And I have a mentor, his name is David Noble. I still stay in close contact with him, but I have a mentor by the name of David Noble. And he always says, when we look at inclusion, that it's not a check the box mentality. It's how do we develop relationships? How do we make sure that we are making sure that we actually have true, genuine relationships with those individuals in our communities? And so an example of that would be the Rockford Park District. There's been an equity committee since 2013. And so it's been made up of community members, staff members, working on diversity policy, non-discriminatory language for bids to ensure that we're having diverse or minority-owned businesses, establishing partnership with NCNY, again, that name's popping up there again, and really seeing how we can create a celebration of cultural diversity within our region. And we actually just recently hired, and I'm going to butcher the formal title, but we actually just recently hired someone at a director's level position to help us with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so we're in this for the long haul. We want everyone to be able to enjoy their park system.
So, Marticia, I know that I've noticed that you've been adding belonging at the end of diversity, equity, inclusion. In my experience, most people hit the three: diversity, equity, inclusion. Mm-hmm. Tell me why you are adding belonging to the end of that, and what does that mean to you?
It's so important. I mean, when you just break down the meanings of all of those words, from diversity, equity, and inclusion, there's something missing. And that piece that's missing is that individuals feel welcome and they feel like they belong when they are going to your organization or working with you. And so sometimes, and I don't think at any fault, organizations may say, here we are, this is what we have to offer. But what happens when I get there? Do I feel that there's a sense of belonging? And so that's so important, not only from a participant in programs, but also to your staff members. They have to feel like they are valid in their culture and who they are, and that they truly, genuinely belong with your organization.
That's beautiful. And thank you for adding that to the dialogue. I haven't heard others adding the belonging, and you do a wonderful job of describing how important that is. I think that's really critical, because it's at the end of the day, the reason that all of this is important is to build a welcoming, cohesive community that is for everyone in the community. And that's a shared goal and an aspiration that we'll probably always be working towards. I don't think this is never one of those things that we could check off the list of done. Yeah. So Marticia, we have covered a lot of really fascinating areas, and let's kind of get back to the opening question about the journey of being a community leader. And you have so excelled at this journey. You clearly have some really well-developed concepts about leadership. And I know you teach this stuff too. Can you maybe share with the listeners your take on leadership? Because everyone has a little different take, and you have so much wisdom to share.
Absolutely. I would say what's very important to me in leadership is that you understand what you stand for. You have to understand what you stand for. That is going to set the foundation for everything that you will do in the future. I mean, jobs change, titles change, but what you stand for quite often doesn't change. And so something that I've been doing for many years, I usually do it once a year, or maybe more frequently when it's a pandemic COVID year. I think I probably revised these a couple times during the crazy pandemic year. But I would ask that you put your principles into writing. You literally write down what you stand for and you put it somewhere where you can see it on a daily basis. So for me, it's actually on my fridge. I probably shouldn't go to the fridge as much as I do, but it's sitting right there on my fridge, just reminding me what I stand for. And just to kind of give some examples of some of those principles. I know for me, I will always be an effective leader that seeks to choose kindness and collaboration over judgment. I stand for that. I don't care what the title is. That is what I am always going to ensure that I do. Something else that really is important for me is that I say, if it isn't for everybody, then it's not for me. So if there's ever a feeling of elitist where people can't have that sense of belonging, I don't want to be a part, or I'm going to go in there and I'm going to change the dynamic of what's going on in that room. And so, you know, I think what's really important in your leadership, even as you develop your dreams and what you want to accomplish in the future, first start with your principles and what you stand for.
That's fantastic. So let's take that one step further. And once you understand what you stand for and you are say, earlier in your journey to being a community leader, then what are some of the steps that you would recommend people take to start that journey, to start moving towards that goal?
Find a mentor. Find a mentor. I have had so many over the course of my life. And even though I say find a mentor, this is pretty unique. You also have to balance and let that mentor find you. So I would encourage that you go out and you build relationships and you build friendships and you will with the leaders that you admire, and you'll find that naturally that mentorship will occur. I've been so blessed to have mentors happen in just that way, building a friendship, giving them a call and saying, I admire what you do. Tell me a little bit more. And now I've had mentors that I've had over 10 years. I think about, you know, yourself, Paul, and I feel like I can always call on you. I think about Tom O'Rourke, that I can always give a call to him. These are people that you built friendship with that you can now lean on for advice and encouragement and to help you paint the vision for the future.
So that connects with networking, because so often, you know, only rarely is someone called a mentor mentee. Like, I find that sort of an awkward, actually, you know, dynamic. Yeah. But in my experience, most of my mentors I have called friends.
Absolutely.
Often friends with more experience or wisdom in a certain area that I need to gain. So networking is so critical to career advancement, to community leadership, to everything. You clearly know everyone, in Rockford, and you know everyone in the park and rec, you know, world. Yeah. Not everyone, obviously, but you have a broad base of connections. And when you have those connections, then it's easier to find answers, to find advice, to find help with projects. Tell us about your networking approach.
I would think my networking approach and what I would encourage current and future leaders is to take it as an opportunity to be a lifelong learner. And that's what usually stimulates my conversation. Everyone on this earth is an expert or a leader in something. And so honor that and take it as an opportunity to learn. And so as I'm in the room, I'm usually looking around and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's something new that I can learn. Let me go talk to that person. And so it becomes less about the, how's the weather? Or how are you? It's pretty cold outside, to, oh my gosh, you're awesome at this. Tell me more. And so I would encourage that in networking, and what I do is really stemming from, how can I be a lifelong learner? You are awesome. You're excellent. You're an expert at something, and I want to learn from you.
Martisha, one of the things I think about in networking is it's all about thinking long-term. So the person you meet, the person you may engage with, may not have the answer that you need today to solve the issue you're working on today, but developing those connections and relationships can help you as you develop, and you may come up with something that you need help with. I mean, think about you and I. We have known each other for, you know, well over a decade.
Yeah.
And there are periods of time where we're not in regular communication, although we see each other on social media, but we know each other, and we know that if there was ever an issue, we can call each other up. We can have a Zoom call. We can do whatever we need to reconnect and be of mutual help. So and so much in life is thinking long term. So how does that connect?
I agree. And what you just said, that friendship is there, where we know that we can call on each other. We know, again, going back to our principles and what we stand for, and I know I can call on you at any point in time. And so when you talk about that long game, it's just opening yourself up to be able to be a help for someone. And so I think that's kind of the partnership and relationship that you and I have, Paul, and that I think you will have as you're networking in the community. It's not just about the now moment. It's not just about the now question, but gosh, I know what you stand for, and something's going to happen in the future where maybe I'll be able to help you and you'll be able to help me. And that's the way that I think we have to look at this relationship building and this networking thing.
So we've been talking a lot about how to become a community leader, and you are certainly, you know, doing that in ACES. But why is community important? Obviously, you wouldn't have developed and devoted your career to it and many others that, that you and I know if this were not critically important. So what does community mean to you, and why is that important?
I'll start first with why community is so important. Community is so important because, simply put, we need each other. We cannot make it in this world without having the help of someone else, or the love and appreciation from someone else, and also giving that love and appreciation. So it's important because we simply need each other. I think what's also important to remember is that your purpose on this earth, at least in my belief, your purpose on this earth is never for yourself. It's always to be giving. It's always to help your neighbor. And so that's what I think about. That's how I define community. It's just a love and appreciation for your neighbor, a willingness to want to have a feeling of oneness while celebrating our differences. And so I get all happy and probably overly emotional when you say the word community, but it just holds so much weight for me.
So one of the things that I think about with community is we have all these organizations, and you are on, you know, the board of numerous ones and work for others and volunteer at yet others. And the reason that organizations are important, important to get right, important to have good leadership, good management, all that good stuff, is from, you know, really the dawn of time, when people wanted to do something beyond the individual ability, you had to pull a group of people together to yeah. accomplish something. So, you know, you pull five people together, you can do much more than one person. If you pull 25 people together, you can do even more. If you pull 1,000 people together, you can do amazing things. So it is simply the multiplier that allows you to accomplish larger and larger goals. And That's why we developed, you know, governments and corporations and nonprofits. All those entities are pulled together to achieve a larger goal. And The ones that are connected, trying to build a better whole, a better community, a better world, because to me, world and community are they're really the same at different scales. Like the community absolutely. Are the people within whatever you define a more localized area, but the world is made of communities. And so when we make our area, our region, our locality, or whatever, a better place to be, we've made the world a better place to be. And
absolutely.
And that's pretty cool. If you could pull that off, but that's why leadership and strategy and organizations, I'm with you. I geek out on this stuff. And if we can figure out and make them better, and they have noble missions that they are about, that helps make the world better.
Absolutely. Community and collective impact. That's what it's about.
So, Marticia, if I could read a little statement off of your resume that you shared with me, I was just blown away by it. And I think now that we've had this great conversation, it speaks so well to who you are, that you are a person who knows what you stand for, who devotes your time and energy where you can make a difference. And I just loved it. So if you'll indulge me, let me read this statement, that you are seeking an opportunity to serve the community at a nonprofit organization in need of bold, innovative, and collaborative leadership focused on collective impact, developing our region for future success. That is an amazing sentence that encompasses everything that we have been talking about here today. And One of the things I so value and appreciate in all that you do is you live your life with tremendous intentionality. And that is not where a lot of people are. A lot of people just have life happen. And you don't just let things happen. You are actively working every single day to make the world a better place, to improve your skills in doing so. Thank you for all that you are doing and all the impact that you are having.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul. That means so much coming from you. And I just so appreciate you continuing these conversations surrounding leadership. I'm listening in on the podcast, and just thank you so much for all you're doing.
Well, thank you. So if you like the content today, and I certainly hope you did, please like, comment, and share. And the reason you do that is that that helps other people access this content. So if we are talking about issues that you are interested in, and we are trying to make the world a better place through these dialogues, if you do those things, like, comment, and share, helps other people find it. It sparks new ideas for other people. It helps us all grow our communities in important ways. Thinking about leadership, thinking about strategy, thinking about how organizations can improve our world. So join us in these dialogues with amazing thought leaders like Martisha Brown, and share this content with your friends so that they can engage in this too. Martisha, thank you so much for joining us today with this. Any conversation with you is a great one, but this has been truly a joy.
Thank you, Paul. I truly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much, and tune in next time.